Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Pop Art. I am your Game Over Man, Game Over host, Howard Kasner, screenwriter and script consultant. Please don't forget to like, comment, or follow this podcast. The concept of Pop Art is for my guests to choose a movie from popular culture, and I intend will choose a film from the more art classic side of cinema that has some connection to it. Today, my guest, screenwriter, film student, and Facebook host, Mark Gunyon, has selected the James Cameron blockbuster sci-fi horror film Aliens. Well, I have chosen the British independent urban sci-fi horror Attack the Block. To begin, I am going to have Mark tell us something about himself.
Well, I went to film school at Northwestern in Chicago. After I've been making movies since I was 12 or 13 years old, Super 8 and stuff like that. And then when I got out of film school, I had kind of a diversion into rock and roll for a while. I finally started my day job for the last 25 years. I name things, products and companies and stuff.
Oh, wow.
That's a fun job. But about 7 years ago, I started finally, after getting my film degree in 83, I finally started trying some screenplays. I'd always wanted to do it. And now I'm at a place where I've got 7 finished features. Part of learning how to write screenplays was I started hosting a Facebook group for aspiring screenwriters and others called Hippy Dippy Hollywood Hopefuls. We have a very cool community of about 300 people, mostly aspiring screenwriters. I haven't sold one yet. I don't know if I can call myself a screenwriter yet. I might have to put that in quotes, but I've done good in some contests and stuff in the last few years. Won Best Comedy a few times with some and won one grand prize, but I'm a lifelong film student, lifelong lover of especially action movies.
Great. So let's get into it. And we will start with Aliens. And I will begin by giving some information on the film. Aliens was released in 1986. It is, of course, a sequel to Alien. It was written and directed by James Cameron with music by James Horner. And it stars Sigourney Weaver, Michael Biehn, Paul Reiser, Lance Henriksen, Carrie Henn, Bill Paxton, William Holt, Jeanette Goldstein, and Al Matthews. The basic plot of the movie revolves around Ellen Ripley, the only survivor of a mining ship who encountered a deadly race of aliens on a distant moon. Years later, she joins a band of space marines to return to the planet when Earth has stopped receiving communication from a mining colony that has settled there. Why did you choose this film?
Well, working off the premise of the show, in a way, I kind of wanted to challenge you. I wanted to come up with a pop choice that was so big and overwhelming that I couldn't imagine what the indie alternative artsy version of it would be. But I think you really scored with your pick. But we'll get to that in a minute. I picked it because to me, it's right up there in the pantheon of the best action, flat out Hollywood popcorn product action movies you could make. To me, it was James Cameron, like at his early peak coming off of Terminator. It's often called one of the best sequels ever. It's like right up there with The Bride of Frankenstein as a sequel that's almost an improvement on the original. It has so much energy to it and so much kineticism, while at the same time really drawing a bunch of interesting characters, you know, in just a few strokes each, because there's so much story and action that goes on. It really draws you 5 or 6 really interesting, detailed characters. So I thought that made it a good package for this comparison. It's kind of peak 80s too. The technology, there's very little CGI in it. It's practical effects, real pyro and stuff like that. And there's so much solid basis for a lot of the tech that you're looking at. And interesting references back to like Vietnam and things like that and the design. And I just love many, many elements. I love the way it looks. I love the dialogue. And the action is just undeniable.
When did you first see the film?
I saw it in its first run in 86, which is unusual because at that time, it was one of the most broke times of my life. And to go see a first run movie, it really had to be, you know, I think it was that and Purple Rain were the only movies I saw in first run in the 80s. But this was one that I saved up my $8.50 to go see. I was in San Francisco. And so I got to see it in one of the great big old, I think it was the one on Van Ness, the AMC theater at the time. They call it the stack of phone booths. So I got to see it in full on big screen, big sound, and a jammed audience, which is good for that film, I think.
What did you think of it when you saw it again recently? Do you think it still holds up, or did you change in any way that you felt about it?
No, well, the only kind of evolution in my thinking, because I saw it twice in the past week. I've had it around, though. I've had like a VHS copy since it came out. It's a movie that I see probably every 2 or 3 years. And kind of before I got into this analytical look at it, it's one that I thought was, I had it in my head that it was overlong, that the second act was a little long. In reviewing it this week, maybe after, I don't know, writing screenplays, it really seems taut to me now. It doesn't feel overlong at all. I absolutely think it holds up. The effects hold up. The design of it still works. The thing about science fiction is you can almost always tell from what year it was made because the hairstyles don't get updated properly. You see a 50s science fiction movie and the women have 50s hairdos. If you see a 70s science fiction movie, they're 70s hairdos. But Aliens is so lean, and the militaristic bent helps out a lot. I definitely think it holds up and would recommend it to any fan of action or horror.
I was like you. I saw it when it first came out. I was in Chicago at the time, out of college. I also very much liked the film. I also thought it was better than the original, as much as I liked the original. And the original was a real surprise. I think people went to the original not expecting it quite to be as good as it was, or quite to be what it was, because it was more than just a science fiction movie, sort of like Aliens. It was also a commentary on capitalism and greed,
right,
and how workers are used, things of that nature. It was for a big sci-fi film. Alien, in many ways, was a very small, big sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. And Aliens, of course, is much, much bigger. I love the film. It was one of my top 10 movies of that year. Seeing it again recently, there were a few things I noticed. Well, actually, there was one thing that I noticed even from the first time. And I have to say this. The movie succeeds in spite of a major, major, major flaw in the plot.
Uh-huh.
The flaw is that they leave this spaceship, the battlecruiser that they arrived on, in space without anybody on board. And that's just not going to happen.
When they're down on the planet, the fact that they have to have the robot bring the second dropship, you mean?
Right. If you think of World War II, if some sort of cruiser comes up to an island and they send soldiers on board to that island via a dinghy or a motorboat or something like that, they're not going to send everybody. Somebody is going to stay on that cruiser.
That's true. But very true. It never occurred to me.
And in many ways, I'm going, this movie is great in spite of this huge major flaw. It somehow manages to make you totally forget this.
Absolutely true.
This plot issue. This time round, I still enjoyed it very much. I think it's very exciting. I think it's very good. I was more, I think, responding to Cameron's visual style than other things. I think I do disagree with you with the dialogue. This time I noticed that the dialogue is kind of not particularly imaginative. It's a little flat. Cameron was never very good as a writer. He's much, much better as a storyteller and visual stylist. The plot itself is very smart and very intelligent, very well thought out. And the movie is almost too intense. I'm not sure I enjoyed it this time as much in the beginning because it is just intense.
It is. It never lets up. It is the accelerators going down every minute, practically. Yeah.
And the characters are strong enough, and they're well acted enough, and they're well developed enough. That makes it even more intense, because it's not as easy to get involved in an intense movie when you could care less about the characters and what happens to them. But when you have characters that you really do care about, that just makes it even more intense.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And you make me want to refine my comment about the dialogue. I think what I'm thinking about when I say that is closer to the performances. The performances are just top notch.
And the most memorable line is one that apparently Cameron didn't write. And that's "Game over, man. Game over."
Right. That's an improvisation. Yeah. I heard you quote that.
It was Bill Paxton. He said he actually improvised a lot of his dialogue. And Cameron did allow the actors to input a lot. He listened to them a lot, took a lot of their feedback and insight, which probably also helped in creating these characters.
Great. The character, it's Hudson, right? The pack to play. You just feel everybody's tension cranking up as he won't shut up. Keeps whining. You were totally there with Ripley and Hicks, just waiting to strangle him.
Right. I mean, he's of no help whatsoever. He's right, basically, right, in many ways, but it's not helping. What are some of your favorite parts of the movie?
There's so many moments in this movie. The ones that really hit me, though, and this kind of goes back to my comment with about performance, and I really learned this on seeing it the second time this week. I am really affected by the moments of Carter Burke, Paul Reiser's character as the company man. And he has some acting moments that I just am blown away by, starting with when he has to tell Ripley that she's been in space for 54 years or 57 years. You know, the little take he does with his face. Nobody else has talked about this with you yet. All of his acting throughout to me is the secret sauce of this thing, because he seems so normal and typical of a corporate guy, but then your horror at his actions just grows and grows and grows. Another moment, of course, I really loved on watching it in repeat is to see how slowly and perfectly Cameron introduces the power lifter, the loader thing that she gets in, the exoskeleton.
That's very clever, because it's like, as Chekhov says, if you introduce a gun in Act 1, it has to be used in Act 3. And he's very clever about introducing things like that. The power loader in Act 1 becomes a major plot point.
I noticed this time you first see it when everybody first assembles on the deck, and it's just in the background. And then there's one guy driving one and he's loading something. You think, oh, this is Cameron. He's showing off his techno fetish just by having every little thing look up to date. But then the way they set up her character, and of course there's this great class thing within the movie about, you know, all the working stiffs, and that goes back to the first one and everybody shares and everything. But when she reveals her value and she says, can I do anything? And Apone says, I don't know, Ripley, can you do anything? And she says, well, I could run that lifter. And the take between Bean and Apone there is great. And I've kind of wondered about that a little bit. Are they looking at each other? In an earlier movie, they would have given each other a look because she's a woman. Saying, right. Oh, a woman can drive that thing? But I think this is something a little different. I think it's more like, oh, the former flight officer. Because Ripley was like a ranked person in the first one. But I love that whole scene. And even though Cameron gives us the clues, he shows how it works as she gets into it. And the detail he shows, we should have caught on, but I swear I was totally surprised. Of course, it all leads up to the most awesome moment of the movie when the door opens and she's in the suit and she delivers that line, get away from her, you bitch. That's an incredible thing. Another moment as far as the horror element goes is the incredible thing in the med lab. When Ripley and Newt fall asleep, Burke has come in and loosed the two face huggers with some very simple practical effects and a little bit of slime. Just makes the skin crawling horror of that scene. She sees her gun is outside and the door is locked. Just the elevation, the cranking and cranking up, the horror is really memorable and awesome. If I could just say one more thing about moments, there's another moment that happens that there's so many things about this you don't have time or brain power to notice in the first time you see it, and you see it the second time, and he has slipped it in so well. And that is when, after she's burned the eggs in the hatchery and she's carrying Newt out, she gets to the two elevators, and the elevators are numbered, number one and number two. And just like any human being would do in that situation, she punches both buttons and she repeatedly slaps 111, 222, 122, like that. So your mind totally accepts it when the queen comes out of number two later. You know, your mind goes, yeah, of course, because the elevator came down there. Similarly, when Bishop is taking the dropship off and they've just loaded in, the way the foot catches a little bit on a piece of metal when the gear is still down before it can break free gives your mind just that little instant when you think back about it. Oh, yeah, that's where the queen climbed in because they were stuck for a second.
And all great highlights, that's certainly for sure. I think it's interesting when you were talking about Ripley's relationship with Alpo. There is an interesting male-female dynamic throughout the whole film. In Alien, you have both male and female people working on this ship. They're pretty much treated equally. Everybody can do their job. Nobody questions the ability of a woman to do the job. In this one, they sort of do constantly question the ability of a woman to do the job in a way. And Ripley keeps telling them or showing them, and not just her, but Vasquez as well, that they're more than able to handle everything. And it's sort of like a series of men mansplaining things.
Yes.
to the women, and the women saying, you don't need to mansplain this, we're better at this
right.
than you are, until she finally convinces everybody that she's actually the best person for yeah. the job, and she's their only hope for getting yeah. out of there.
Well, you probably know the secret ingredient of why that relationship worked in the first film, right? The part of Ripley was written as a man.
That's right.
And so those
weren't they all men? I think in the very yeah. early version, and then it changed over time.
Correct. So that's good advice to screenwriters. Write the parts one way, but don't be afraid to flip the polarity and make for an interesting movie. But you're right. The second one, Aliens, I mean, you're right. It's scene after scene like that, even with the people before they go, when the corporate guys are there. She just keeps telling everybody, you're all going to die.
And then I think there's also, I think you sort of hinted at it, but there is sort of the start of a sexual tension and romantic feelings between Ripley and Hicks that is hinted at, but of course can't be fulfilled yeah. under the circumstances. They're a little distracted right yeah. now. It yeah. is interesting, though, that I believe Hicks was one of the survivors. And then in Aliens 3, which my personal opinion is, they blow it from the opening scene right. and it never recovers
right.
by having everybody die except, I guess, Sigourney Weaver and Bishop, who is a AI.
Massively beloved characters, Hicks and Newt, are both like dead at the start of 3, right?
My first thought was, well, you just made Aliens 2 completely yeah. unimportant. Nothing that happened in Aliens 2 is of importance now. You've just contradicted everything you set up. I know sort of why they did that for Newt, because mm-hmm. it took so long to make Aliens 3 that mm-hmm. you have to have a Newt that's exactly the same age because they don't age. And right. so the person playing Newt couldn't play Newt. I don't completely buy that. You just get another actress of the correct age to do it. They've done it in other films. They've done it on TV. But I just never understood that. That was just a huge, huge mistake for me. And one of the reasons why Aliens 3 didn't quite yeah. work.
And to go back to what you were saying before about something, it might just be because he's John Connor's dad, and so we have this warm spot in our heart for him, you know, falling in love with our lead actress. You know that he's really good, and Weaver is really good, because of the sexual tension of when he repeats her line, when she finally points out that he's in charge, and he goes, oh, I think we should dust off and nuke the whole place from orbit. It's the only way to be sure, you know. That is like a date right there. It's like a hot first date.
It's a throwback to movies of the 30s mm-hmm. and early 40s, in which the basic idea was to find the alpha male or the Superman and mate that person with the super female. And that started drifting away in the 50s when women were more and more starting to be portrayed as neurotic if they were too strong. Mm-hmm. And then men started being portrayed as neurotic in the 60s and 70s. And we got away from the idea of the Superman and Superwoman. But here in Aliens, we have the reemergence of the Superman and the Superwoman, especially the reemergence of the Superwoman. And this was a huge contrast to much of how women were portrayed at this time, mm-hmm. and a huge contrast to two of the ugliest portrayals of female at the time, Network and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Uh-huh.
I mean, brilliantly acted, but horrible portrayals of women. Then we have Terminator and we have Aliens, where suddenly now we have two strong women mm-hmm. that are not put down because they're women trying to do a man's job, or mm-hmm. as a woman trying to control men.
And that's also another interesting element of Aliens, is the overpowering estrogen vibe of it, with Ripley at the center, and then Newt and Ripley, most unlikely candidate to get to play a mother. But then don't forget that the alien queen is a queen. And when Weaver calls her bitch, that makes this frisson of femaleness happen like you've never seen at the climax of a giant action sci-fi battle. It's like, wow, you know, there's everybody surviving on the screen right now is the powerful woman of some kind. And that's a great, awesome thing that is probably hits most people on a subconscious level, even.
Yes, I think you're very right. It's more driven by estrogen than testosterone, and all the better for it. What do you think overall, James Cameron?
I'm a fan, although he's approaching Bond villain status in a way. I really love his story, you know, his origin story, and his career details are fascinating to me. And he seems like a decent enough guy, but also a maniac, you know, a madman. I love reading about True Lies and how he would, like, you know, elbow the cameraman aside to take the dangerous shot himself. I've read horrible things about when he was breaking up with Linda Hamilton to go make Titanic. He goes, look, there's only 5 people in the world who could do this job. I've got to go do this. So he's a real character. I mean, his work is just so iconic. And to me, I'm more interested in action than anything else as something that I want to do. So I think of him as like totemic, essentially, you know, with his shortcomings and so on. But the visuals and the story of what he does sweeps away a lot of his weaker stuff, which sounds to me like I'd love to hear what you think of James Cameron.
I think he is an incredible director and a visual stylist and knows how to tell a story. I think he's often not particularly good writer. Mm-hmm. His characters and dialogue, they vary, but generally, you know, they fall short. When Titanic came out and when Avatar came out, he got my award for best director of each year, but neither film made my top 10. Mm-hmm. And Titanic, which I think is better than Avatar, is better written, and the dialogue is a bit better, and the characters are better. But it still sort of suffers in the writing aspect of it. And Avatar, I think, is horrendously written. Characters are incredibly one-dimensional and paper-thin, and the dialogue just is very hard to listen to. But he's a brilliant, brilliant director. People say, who is more important, the director or the screenwriter? Mm-hmm. Or what does the director do and what does the screenwriter do? What do each contribute? Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes go to James Cameron, because as a director, he's incredible and you can see what he brings. Right. But then if you look at the screenplay, you can see what he doesn't bring, and that it probably would have been better if he had had a much stronger screenplay.
That is so true. I can't think of a single line from Avatar. I can't think of a single exchange or word of dialogue from it. And I've seen it a couple times, I know. But as a movie, think of yourself as if you were a person living in Bombay or living in Buenos Aires or in Moscow or something. You'd still get 95% of what we got out of it, even if you watched it in English, because as a movie, it obviously is an overwhelming piece of work, and it's all, you know, Cameron's thumbprint on every single frame. And the story of that one is...
His weakest. It's very cliché.
Right. It's a total cliché, a story told over and over, and the ending is lame. You're right, though. It's the direction of it. In fact, I'm going to reference it as a movie to see after Aliens, and it's for those visual elements completely.
But his movies are very enjoyable, and I enjoy Titanic very, very much. A lot of people make fun of it. A lot of people don't like it. I think he does capture the true horror. The last 30 or 40 minutes of Titanic with the sinking is devastating and very, very powerful. The events leading up to it are sometimes interesting, sometimes not. Those last moments of the ship sinking is really just terrifying.
There it is again. As a filmmaker, unsurpassable.
The making of the film was very, very difficult for a variety of reasons. One is they didn't have enough time, and they had to do it in a shorter period of time that he wanted. And they also had budget constraints, so they did some imaginative things to get around that, such as when they wake up in the cryo chamber. There's actually only 4 cryo chambers there because each one costs $4,300 and they couldn't afford more than 4. So they do things with mirrors and things to make it seem like there's 12. The crew he had all worked on Alien. And Terminator had not been released yet. In fact, he was still working on Terminator as he was working on the screenplay, I think, for Aliens. They had a great allegiance to Ridley Scott, and they just gave him a lot of trouble. Of course, apparently, as you said, he's not always the most cooperative person himself. But he had to fire a couple of people. He had to fire the cinematographer. He just simply refused to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
There was a walkout. They got the people back. They also had to fire somebody else. They were all very frustrated at having to take time off for tea. And they didn't want to work 12 hours a day. And James Horner was very frustrated because he had to write a score without having the movie done.
Yeah. Well, it was funny when we were talking before about estrogen power in this thing. It reminded me how the person who saved his biscuits on this turns out to be Gail Ann Hurd, right? Who has to rise above the squabbling of fighting men and say, damn it, we have a mission here.
Yes.
Come on and get back. We have to work together. Quit fighting and whining.
Well, I have to say that James Cameron seems to be attracted to very strong women.
I'll say.
Apparently, after the final day of shooting, when everything was done, he got all the crew together and said, the best thing about today is I will never have to ever work with you people again.
That's cold.
And he left Pinewood Studios, and he has never been back. Some final notes. It got 7 Academy Award nominations, Best Actress, Film Editing, Art Direction, Best Original Score, Best Sound Effect Editing, and Best Visual Effects. And it won the Sound Effects Editing and Visual Effects. Sigourney Weaver is the first woman to be nominated for Lead Actress in a Sci-Fi. I believe Close Encounters came before this, and there was a Supporting Actress nomination from that one. The alien set was not dismantled and was used for Axis Chemical and the movie Batman. It was the 7th highest grossing film in its opening in North America. Of course, it got a lot more worldwide and overall. It cost $18 million to make, and it made $180 million.
Jeez, that is the sweet spot right there. That's the producers I'm looking for.
With that, let's proceed to my choice, which is Attack the Block.
Great.
First, some information on the film. It was written and directed by Joe Cornish. It stars Jodie Whittaker, John Boyega, Alex Esmail, Franz Drama, Leon Jones, Simon Howard, Luke Treadway, Jermaine Hunter, and Nick Frost. The basic premise revolves around a teenage street gang who have to defend themselves from predatory alien invaders on a council estate in South London on Guy Fawkes Night. So again, let's start with, when did you first see the film?
This is funny because as soon as it came out, I heard things about it that were really appealing to me. And I bought the DVD not long after it came out. But for some reason, I kept pushing it off my list to see and really only saw it for the first time just a month ago.
So it's a sort of a coincidence.
Exactly. When you picked it, I was like, oh, perfect.
And what did you think of it when you first saw it?
Oh, I was knocked out. I really loved it. I had a prejudice against it. This might have been why I didn't look for so long. I thought that I wouldn't be able to follow the language or kind of the social setting of this gang of kids. You know, I thought that was going to be really alien to me and hard to follow. But no, I was knocked out by it. And I love the monsters are so scary. I love the underplayed way they present the monsters and everything. I love the contained feel of being in this housing block, the great up and down stairways and causeways and bike paths. It's so similar, really, to these spaceships and alien colonies on the Alien movies. But I also loved the dialogue, again, in the characters and acting. By the dialogue in this case, I loved all the slang and trying to ride along and keep up with the slang and deciphering it. It sounded really teenage rhythms. I guess he recruited a lot of the actors from drama schools from blocks like that and from neighborhoods like that.
Right.
But it was fun to hear the way he says fam all the time. It would take to be short for family when he's referring to the gang. Ninja. I just love the way they talk. But that combined with these great monsters. And then the plot reveal that happens when they go into the drug room. That just made it click for me. That was just brilliant, I thought. And again, it's going back to our estrogen testosterone theme for this show. So yeah, I was really impressed. Really liked it. Really enjoyed it. It seems like it's going to become an annual for me.
I saw it when it first came out. It was at a time when, you know, you're always looking for that film that is not the big film, that it's an independent film, doesn't necessarily get the big push that others do. I don't know whether a lot of people saw it at the time. I got the feeling that not a lot of people did in the U.S. I think it did much better in England than it did in the U.S. I think it got a little lost here. But I was very impressed by it for many of the reasons that you say. The character and dialogues are so rich. It's a cross-section of people. It's not just people that are only from the block there. It's a different races of different backgrounds, different economic background. And everything was perfect. They got everything, it seemed, just down perfectly. And the plot, I think in many ways you were right to compare it to Aliens, because Aliens seems like a very, very big movie, and it is. But in many ways, it's also a very small contained movie when it comes to plot. And so is Attack the Block. And at first I was wondering, well, they're not really giving us anything. How can they possibly win? What can they possibly do? You have to give these characters some sort of goal, or otherwise the story isn't going anywhere. And you do. There's this huge big reveal in the drug room where it all starts coming together and they all start figuring out what they can do to get rid of it. Because in many ways, it's the same thing. There is a queen. You get rid of the queen, there won't be any more of the others. They can't procreate. So once you get rid of the queen, then you just have to find some way to get rid of all the other aliens as well.
And in the way they, that reveal with the light is so great. And it's funny because that also backward looking in two ways, it looks back over the story and everybody who got killed on the way is explained by whether or not they came in contact with this thing. And there's also this element of the monsters are just so out of control because of the pheromones. It adds to their madness and threat. It's them, not just horrible monsters, but they're horrible monsters in heat.
Right. You don't really have any control over, and they don't have any real control over themselves either. And that does make them a lot more scary. But you were talking about how scary the monsters are. And certainly one of my most indelible moments and the one I remember most is when they're looking at this black worm and it has the two luminescent slots. Yeah. And someone says, look at those eyes. And the other one says, I don't think those are eyes. And then suddenly the mouth opens and there are these luminescent teeth. And you go, oh God, this is not good.
And that's an interesting wrinkle too that connects to the alien universe in that the xenomorphs don't have an obvious eye either. And I've seen in some versions of that story that the xenomorphs actually are supposed to be blind and have all these other senses, which is a funny parallel. But in Attack the Block gets this feeling that you get a lot in Aliens of humans at one end of a skinny little hallway and a bunch of monsters coming fast down that hallway makes you push back in your theater seat and go, oh my God.
For people who do see it, and if they do see it on TV, I do recommend turning on the closed captions.
Exactly.
They did consider releasing the film in the U.S. with subtitles.
Yeah.
I think they showed it to some audiences first, and the audiences said no, they were able to follow it well enough. And I was, when I first saw it, I was able to follow it and understand what was going on.
This highlights one other thing. I did turn on the captioning just to get past my little reservation about that. I think I would have been fine without it, but it really did help. But this reminds me of one other thing, and I can speak from my day job about this movie and about why it might not have done better here. I think it's a terrible title.
It is. It's not the best title, I agree.
And I wonder if they lost 25 or 40% of potential audience because it seems like it's going to be a gang fight movie or a cop versus gang movie.
I think that's a very good point. It probably could have done better. I don't believe it lost money, but I do think they say it underperformed. I do agree that the acting is excellent. He really found very fine actors to be in the story. And yes, he did go to council estate schools, people who were in acting classes and drama classes. I guess they had to audition like 9 times because he wanted to make sure they would actually committed and would keep coming back and would actually go through with doing the movie.
Is this Boyega's first movie?
I did not check, but I think it is.
Wow.
And of course, as many people may know, Boyega went on to play Finn and the Star Wars, the last trilogy, and caused a lot of controversy when it was revealed that he was a stormtrooper. I remember that got really ugly on Facebook.
A great performance here, though, the way he is the natural leader and the, you know, the improviser and fierce with his samurai sword and everything, but just great to see. There's a movie you've probably seen called Super 8.
Yes.
I thought that was very realistic about how it talked about adolescents talking and interacting. Acting and leading and following. And I thought Attack of the Block was really good that way, too. It seemed very natural the way the troops fell in line behind Moses and flow back and forth of that power kind of thing that happens.
Why do you think that most alien films, not all certainly, but most alien films present aliens as so negative?
And you're not talking about the alien series. You mean sci-fi with monsters.
Well,
aliens.
Here, Attack the Block, Aliens, War of the Worlds. The vast majority of them seem to see aliens as, if they come here, they're going to do nothing but destroy us.
Right. That's true. There's never thoughtful explorers.
There are exceptions. E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Arrival.
Things like that. There are exceptions. most of them just seem to be portray aliens as
racist
people that here to get rid of us.
It's interesting in Attack the Block that their explanation for that was even the, I don't know how the kid got this idea, but he described them as spores floating through that. I thought that was interesting that they weren't even a civilization or something like that, but it kept them on the, on an animal level exclusively. Where versions of War of the Worlds, they usually have to split the difference. You know, they have this great technology, but then once they come out, then they still just want to eat people. So.
Yeah, all they'd want to do is destroy this world. I think it's interesting if you ever saw the remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still. It's very interesting when Kathy Bates comes and talks to Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves asks her why she is assuming that he is there for bad reason. And she says, every time in the history of the planet Earth, when one civilization goes to another, it's bad news. So there's no reason to assume that when aliens come here, they're going to be any different than we are. And I suspect that's probably one of the reasons why they're portrayed that way. We're projecting our own history on aliens. And it's an interesting metaphor. One thing that makes horror movies and science fiction movies is they take something in reality and then use it as a metaphor and take it to its extreme. So in these sorts of movies, we're sort of put in on the part of the natives who are there when we arrive. And we are now treated the same way we treated these people when we first arrived in America and South America and Mexico.
Yeah. I remember an explicit comparison when the Tom Cruise version of War of the Worlds came out. That came out right around the time when we were engaging in, I forget now if it was Iraq or Iran, but, you know, it was the U.S. invading the Middle East. It seemed the movie was really trying to say, here you are living your life and a giant, far superior technology comes grinding through you. I remember people making direct comparisons to that.
What I thought at the time when the War of the Worlds came out, but I think it's underrated, it was after 9/11. And I thought it was very interesting because before 9/11, Steven Spielberg had made E.T. and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where aliens were benign. They weren't here to take over. They weren't here to destroy us. Then we have 9/11, and he does Munich, and he does War of the Worlds. And suddenly his aliens are now these people who want to destroy us. I'm not saying he did that purposely or that was his intent.
It's all to the whole industry. You know, you look up and down the, from the corporate board all the way down, and they can say, oh, I see that story now. And the producers say, oh, I get that story now. And the market people say, oh, the audience is ready for that story now. You know, so it's part of movie making that it's a gigantic corporate thing all the time. And so when any good, pure thought comes out of it, that's always interesting for it to survive that process.
Some more facts about Attack the Block. In England, I believe it was the third most successful film of that year behind Thor and Fast Five. A lot of the names on the estate, street names, building names, are named after science fiction writers. It takes place at the Wyndham Estates, and John Wyndham wrote The Midwich Cuckoos, which became Village of the Damned, and The Day of the Triffids. And J.G. Ballard is one of the street names. And there's a lot more, a lot of names that are English science fiction and horror writers. It did underperform at the box office, but it does now have a very strong cult following. Joe Cornish did go on to co-write Ant-Man. Jodie Whittaker is now the 13th Doctor on Doctor Who. John Boyega, of course, as we mentioned, became Finn in the new Star Wars trilogy. And of course, Nick Frost, who is one of the people in the drug room, the one who actually sells the drugs, is very famous because of Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz.
And I know him from Pirate Radio.
Right.
And there's something, it's not the Ruddles or Spinal Tap, there's some rock and roll story he's in.
Right, yeah, I don't quite remember the name, but I know.
He's good.
I haven't seen that. Yes, he's a very good actor. So in closing, I asked you to pick one or two films that you might recommend that are in the same vein of Aliens.
One of them we touched on already, and that was Avatar, for a lot of the reasons of seeing peak technology and a director-writer who can get anything he wants in the world. Avatar is a really incredibly immersive movie, but I agree with my host here. You could just about bring your radio and listen to NPR while you watch it and not miss any. As movies go, it is an incredible visual thing. Another movie, I was trying to think of another reference to Aliens, and this kind of goes back to the first Alien movie too. A movie that was widely hated, a movie that really bombed, a movie that killed off a franchise, I believe, but I think has a little element that echoes in here, and that's World War Z. with Brad Pitt. Did you see that?
Yes, it did very well at the box office.
Oh, did it? I thought it didn't do that well.
No, I think it did very well. You are right. Some people did ridicule it. I thought it was one of the smartest movies of the year. And I think there is supposed to be a sequel. My choice is going to be Invasion of the Body Snatchers because in many ways it has the basic setup of Attack the Block.
Uh-huh.
It is also about spores traveling through space. They land on a planet and they take advantage of whatever is there on the planet to multiply until they take over the world. And then when the planet is no longer hospitable to them, they take off for another planet. This was in the 1950s, I think. I want to say 1956.
Uh-huh.
The sequel came in the 1970s. I think the sequel or remake, it's kind of hard to say whether you consider it a sequel or remake because, for one thing, in the remake, McCarthy, the lead, shows up in the remake at the beginning, shouting, "You're next, you're next."
Yeah.
I think it's better than the original, though I like both very much. I also recommend, I believe it's called Body Snatchers, which is the third version.
Abel Ferreira?
Yes, that takes place at a military base. Uh-huh. I've not seen Invasion. It got such horrible reviews that I didn't bother seeing it. So I recommend all three Invasion of the Body Snatcher movies. In closing, what should we be looking for or what are you working on now?
I have a two or three ideas in development, but I can only say that I've got one thing I'm in the middle of. I have a screenplay called The Checkered, and I'm about two-thirds of the way through it, a little bit chomping at the end of my act two, but it's a screenplay I hope to take out into the world and chase into some contests next year. I'm from an automotive family from Indianapolis, a story that just takes all of the legends about cars from my family and weaves them into a fictionalized kind of a decades-long family drama.
This sounds very good. This sounds something to look forward to. As for me, I'll go through my usual litany.
Please.
I am a screenplay consultant, and I have a Facebook page, Howard Kastner Screenplay Consultation page. I have a blog, Rantings and Ravings, which deals with subjects of screenwriting and movies. I have published two books of short stories on Amazon, The Starving Artist and Other Stories, and The Five Corporations and One True Religion, horror, sci-fi, fantasy short stories.
Right.
The second edition of my screenwriting book, More Rantings and Ravings of a Screenplay Reader, is also available on Amazon. I'm an amateur photographer. You can find that on Instagram. And of course, there is this podcast. The previous podcast, I talked about the movies The Omen and Village of the Damned with Riley on Film. And next week, I'm going to be joined by filmmaker Josh Kim, where we will be talking about Adaptation and Sunset Boulevard, both movies about screenwriters.
Screenwriting, that's great.
So once again, I very much appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you very much. I had a really great time. I love to talk about movies, and this was a really fun chance.
Great. And for my listeners again, please do like, comment, and follow.